You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is
Tracy Wolf.
Authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website. Developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates, PubSite is the new easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. Build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web. Before We Ever Spoke by Dan Largent. Cleveland, Ohio, 2006. After a chance encounter, three people soon find out that life can sometimes thrust us into the public eye, even when taking great measures to avoid it. Cooper Madison was the best pitcher in baseball after being drafted number one overall in 1996 from the small Gulf Coast town of Pass Christian, Mississippi. One year after announcing his sudden and shocking retirement, he finds himself seeking anonymity in Cleveland, Ohio. Kara Knox is the youngest sibling to three older brothers. After a tragic work accident to her closest relative, she has built up a tough exterior as she begins her final year of college at Cleveland State University. Jason Knox, Kara's oldest brother, is the lead detective on Cleveland's Edgewater Park killer case. After months without a suspect, he's feeling the heat from his media-hungry chief. Serendipity intervenes, and all three learn that perception and reality are paths that rarely ever intersect. Before We Ever Spoke by Dan Largent. Hey folks, you really ought to check out Patricia Gillum's Heroes of Corvus series. Book one is called A Superhero's Duty, a fight between a second-generation superhero named Red Bolt and a villain-for-hire named Icarus goes terribly wrong, resulting in the drowning deaths of three innocent civilians and orphaning a six-year-old boy. Racked with guilt, Red Bolt visits Cameron Wilson at the hospital every night and won't leave the boy's side until he falls asleep. Befriended by a night shift nurse, the man in costume begins to disclose what really happened after the fight and why he feels the death of Cameron's parents and sister fall on his actions. A superhero didn't survive that night, and Cameron and the rest of the city are not out of danger. A Superhero's Duty, Book 1 of The Heroes of Corvus by Patricia Gillum. Get this series now. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm super excited to have Tracy Wolf on the show with me today. She has a phenomenal new book. It's called Crave. It's the first book in a new series called the Crave series. And if you love paranormal stories, you're going to need this one in your to-be-read list. Welcome to the show, Tracy.
Thanks so much, Hank. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Tracy, we begin each show with the same question, and that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
I actually have a really clear first memory of it, and I don't know that it's very different than a lot of other writers, but it's mine. So we were living in San Francisco at the time. I moved around a lot as a kid, but I remember we were living in San Francisco at the time, and my parents had gone into the bank to, I don't know if it was to work on the mortgage because we had just moved there or whatever it was. But that was back in the days where you were okay leaving your kitten in the car for a little while. And they had asked me, do you want to come in? I'm like, no, I'm reading a good book. I would have been about six. I was like, no, I'm reading a good book. I just want to stay here. And they were like, okay, that's fine. And it was a Judy Blume book. And I finished up my Judy Blume book. And then I was super bored. I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to go in the bank. And I looked over and there was an aquamarine, I still remember, marker and a notepad. And I was like, okay, what can I do with this? And I wrote a story. And it had a prince and a frog and a leprechaun and a pot of gold. And I don't remember what else. But I just remember when I was done thinking, this is the coolest thing ever. I can just write stories. I can just tell stories about things in my head. And I don't think I've ever not wanted to be a writer from that day on.
Oh, that's so funny. Did you start writing, other things after that? Were you one of those kids that kept a notebook or,
I did. I kept a journal off and on. I've never been really good at being consistent with anything like that. But I did keep a journal off and on all through junior high, high school, even into college. I wrote short stories in middle school, junior high. And then when I got to high school, I kind of switched to poetry, you know.
Right. High school.
And I wrote dark, moody poetry.
No explanation needed. We all can connect with that.
Right. And I loved it. And then I went to college and that's when I took my first real creative writing fiction classes. And I took a poetry class too, but mostly creative writing fiction. And I just was like, this is it.
Wow. What was your major in college?
I majored in English and journalism.
Okay. So was that for an emphasis that I'm going to get the tools that I need to be a writer or, did you plan to be a journalist? Like what in your head was the plan?
The plan was being able to support myself. And my mother was very clear. My mother is a wonderful woman and she's also very pragmatic. And she told me she was not going to support me when I was 40. So I needed to make sure I had a career I could fall back on. And at the time it became my career for a while, certainly. I was an English professor and I had said, okay, well, I'm going to go to school. I'm going to go all the way through, get my degrees and become an English professor. And so, I majored in English because it was English or law when I was in college. And I don't like to argue. I think as much as you'd need to be a trial lawyer. So, I'd always known I wanted to be a writer, but it's either going to be an English professor or a lawyer as I tried to support myself until my writing took off. And an English professor won. And then I was an English teacher, a high school English teacher for a while, and then an English professor. And after we'd moved to Austin, I wrote my first novel. I stayed home for a year because my second son was premature and his lungs were not in great shape. And the doctor asked me to said, if you could stay home for a year, if you could afford it, we could really get his lungs in a lot better shape. And I was like, well, there's, that's a no-brainer, right? And I stayed home for a year and I took that time to write what became my first two novels. And I haven't looked back since.
So were you writing during the time that you were teaching and English?
I want to say yes. But the truth was at that time I was working full time. I had at that point two children. I now have three. And I wasn't writing nearly as much as I would have liked to have been writing, but life and all of that kind of got in the way for a while. And then, which is why when I had that opportunity for that year, right, I was just like, you know what, this is probably the only time in my life I'm going to have this shot, and I'm going to take it. And that was in 2005, 2006 time period. And my first book came out at the end of 2007.
Is your middle son well now? Did all of
he
that?
Yes, he is. I'm actually really worried about him because he was born at a weird time when his lungs weren't fully developed, and so COVID-19 has me really scared about him catching it, just because his lungs have never been great. I mean, he's super healthy. He's 6 foot tall and in great health, but when he gets sick, he gets sick. So.
Well, I tell you, all of us in my family, we all have asthma and
and
horrible allergies, and we live in the South, and we're completely surrounded by pine trees. And so every day pine pollen is just raining down, and we go through the check every day. Okay, is this allergies or is this COVID-19? But
we do the same thing because I live in Austin, and that's like the allergy capital of Texas, right? And we have all the cedar, and everybody, there's all the memes like, this is not fair. Is it COVID or is it allergies?
Right.
Like, what are we dealing with here? And so we're all totally freaked out all the time.
Yeah. Oh man. I'm so happy that your son, got through that time, and no one would ask, for that, to have a premature baby.
Yeah.
And all of that. But do you ever look back and go, what a gift in disguise that, what would I be doing right now if that wouldn't have happened? And no, you never would have asked for that, but it's just so, I love the stories of how life takes a left turn. And something good comes out of it.
Right. Yeah, no, I do. I remember that time so well because I guarded my writing time so carefully because the only time I had to write even then, right, I had his brother was young too. He was at school, but you had the working hours when he was at school. But my middle son is a mischievous sort. And so I could only take my eyes off him like the 3 hour. Thank God he was a napper. Thank God he was a napper. He napped for 3 hours in the afternoon, and I would literally get him to sleep. And then I would run up the stairs to my office and I would write for like 3 hours. Like nobody called me, nobody disturbed me, whatever. And I think how blessed I was that he didn't get, his lungs cleared up so much during that time. And he didn't really get sick during that time because he wasn't in daycare with a babysitter. How many people get to do their dream? You know what I mean? It was handed to me backhanded. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, I'm so worried about my son. But at the same time, it something I think amazing came out of it. And I'm so grateful.
Absolutely. You said that your first two books came out of that time. Do you remember when those books were birthed in your mind? Do you remember what the catalyst was that kicked off those?
I actually remember the catalyst for both of them. The first one, they were both originally written. I was hoping to get into Harlequin because at Harlequin at the time, you didn't need an agent. And I thought that would be a good way to get a contract and then get an agent from the contract kind of a thing because it was really competitive. It still is really competitive, right? So anyway, the first one, Harlequin, had opened up a line that didn't last very long, but I loved the idea of it. And it was right around the time that, The Notebook was so popular and all of the, big family sagas were so popular, and they'd opened up a line, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's such a great, idea. I would love to write a book that kind of traveled generations and it had romance in it, but was really this family saga. And so I'd been kind of trying to think of an idea, what I wanted to do. And we drove, I said I live in Austin, we drove to Fredericksburg, which is this small little town that has a peach festival and a lot of wineries and whatever. We took the whole family there for a day trip. And we passed this huge thoroughbred farm on our way. And I don't know, something just like looking at that farm clicked. And the book that I at that time called The Turn for Home, was just born in my head, and I came home and I wrote it really fast. And then that line happened to be having a contest. And I mean, I think back and I think, wow, I had a lot of audacity, not necessarily because of the contest, but they had gone after for the line, like all of the best writers that they had, like some really, really beautiful, beautiful writers, like, you know, who were major number one New York Times bestsellers. And like, what was I thinking? Is what I think, you know? And, but anyway, I entered the contest and I placed in the contest and they ended up buying the book. They wanted some revisions and then they ended up buying the book like 6 months later. And, that became my first book published in November of 2007. I actually used that to get an agent in the second book that I had been working on. I'm not a photographer, but I'm not an artist. But I'm fascinated by all art forms, and photography particularly really interests me. And I had this idea for this really psychologically damaged photographer I wanted to play around with. And my book, which is named Full Exposure, kind of came from that. And I was literally sitting upstairs in my office thinking about what I wanted to do with this character that had kind of been talking to me. And that's where that was born. And I got my agent off of the turn for home and she said, do you have anything else lying under your bed? And I was like, well, I actually have this one book that she's like, send it to me. She's like, oh my God, I love it. And she sold it over Christmas in like 2 weeks. And I was like, to Penguin. And I was like, all right, here we go.
Okay.
And
lightning struck and twice.
Yeah. So I got really lucky. Really lucky. Wow.
What was your family's response to all of this happening?
They were super supportive. My boys have always been incredibly, incredibly supportive of me. They, and they're super excited about Crave, by the way, so excited about Crave. But in fact, they helped me come up with some of the chapter titles and all of that. So it was a family affair. But one of my funny stories that I like to tell, is when I got the call. Because when I'd been waiting for that first, you know, you wait for that first call for what feels like forever, right? And it was, I knew it was coming from Canada because that's where Harlequin was. And I had been fooled a couple times before because it'd be the Canadian area code that I was looking for. And then it was somebody selling health insurance or somebody selling, you know, whatever. So anyway, by this time, my third son had been born, also premature. And we were walking, he and I were walking literally out the garage door to get in the car for me to go to his doctor's appointment. And the phone rings. And I remember my husband at the time was standing right at the laundry room door as I was like walking through the laundry room into the garage. And I'm like, he's like, oh, it's that area code you're waiting. I'm like, oh, don't worry about it. It's just something, you know, stupid. And I keep walking. And then I had met the editor at a conference and her voice comes over the answering machine, right? Because this is back in 2006. Hi, Tracy. This is, and you know, right? They only ever call if it's good news. They never call if it's bad news. And like, this is Beverly. And I'm like, oh my God. And I just remember my poor baby. I like threw him at my husband, and took off like diving through the dining room or through the laundry room door to the nearest phone. Got it. Hello, don't hang up. And Beverly was like, hi, Tracy. And, you know, and the thing is, everybody who knows me knows I'm not a crier. I don't cry in public or in front of people like ever. I'm super, super private about that. And anyway, she tells me and I just burst into tears. And the funny thing is, she was so excited because she's like, I've never had a crier before. I've always wanted a crier. And I'm like, oh, great, Beverly, thanks. So I'm your crier.
One time in my life and I become somebody's first.
Right, exactly. So anyway, so that's where I was when I.
That's amazing. Well, in the intervening years between that amazing story and Crave, which is what we're here talking about today, you've written like over 60 books. You said that, you know, those first books that you wrote really quickly. It would appear to me that's kind of your MO. I mean, you've published a lot of books in the meantime. Do you consider yourself a fast writer? And, you know, what do you make of your being so prolific?
I am a fast writer. I've slowed down some in recent years, just because, like, you know, there, you know, you have your ups and downs and life's been was rough for a couple of years there. But yeah, my process is not one that, when you go and you talk to school kids and they always ask what your process is, and I'm always the first one to say my process is not something anybody should imitate. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible process. And I got that actually from a writer named Mary Mancusi, who was on a panel with me once. And the first time the question came up, she was like, nobody do what she does. Nobody. And my thing is, I start, right? I write the first three chapters like super quick, like in a day and a half. But that's really where I get to know my characters. So then for the next like 3 weeks or whatever, I play maybe longer. I just play with them. And I like everything kind of unfolds for me then. And I can't really go forward until I really have a grasp. And then usually I'm up because I have contracts. I'm usually up against a deadline. And it's usually about 2 weeks before the deadline that like everything kind of comes clear. And then I basically spew out a book in about 2 weeks. And, you know, by then I like, you know, I can't walk and I'm all hunched up and I'm all like, you know, as I'm getting, you know, I'm not 25 anymore. So now that I'm, you know, in my early 40s, I'm like, oh, this hurts a lot more than it used to.
Right.
To be curled on a bed for 8 hours writing a book.
You start looking
at,
like,
so I do that and I don't sleep.
Yeah, you start caring about things like ergonomics and words.
Yes,
that,
right.
That, that mean that nothing to people in their 20s.
I'm like, wait, I can't just like sit like literally curled in a ball for like 16 hours. I have to move. What? So then I don't sleep. And usually by like 4 days or 3 or 4 days before the book is due, I'm like, the room is spinning and I'm like, but that's how I know I've got it. Right. Like you go down, like, I'm like, okay, I can't think anymore. I have to sleep for an hour. I sleep for an hour and you just keep dreaming the book. And that's why I'm like, okay, yeah, I've got this. And then it just kind of, yeah. And then I'm done. Crave was a little different, but
yeah. Would you consider yourself a pantser then, if that's kind of your
that's
writing process?
I would have said absolutely several years ago. I would have said I am absolutely a pantser. Now I'm, what do they call it, a plotster?
A plotster,
like a mixer,
yeah.
Right. I start out pantsing, and then somewhere right around chapter three is where I really start thinking about stuff, and then I write straight through to like chapter 10, and then right around then I'm like, okay, now I need to really think about where I want the rest of it to go. And that's when I really start plotting. So I'm a mixture.
So you like to lay a foundation.
Yes.
And really kind of understand your setting and your characters and figure out what the main, tension of the book is, or the main problem of the book. And then from there, you like to kind of plot out where you see this going.
Yeah, that's actually a much better description than the way I put it. Yes, that's what I like to do. I can't build a world until I'm in it. Like, I have general ideas, obviously, when I sit down with the first three, but especially if I'm looking at like a fantasy world, like I am in Crave, right? Or whatever. It's not till I get in there and I really like I meet Jackson or I meet Grace, that I start thinking, oh, okay, this is, you know, and this is how this works. And then you start thinking about the questions. Well, how does this work in this world? And how does that work? And then you start, you know, I start building it from there as I really kind of get into the meat of it.
How often have you written fantasy? Do you consider yourself a fantasy writer? Or is this a kind of a new turn in your writing?
I actually wrote... Well, as YA, I wrote I'm trying to count in my head how many there are. that's what the pauses are. I wrote a mermaid trilogy. That was actually my first YA trilogy, and it was back, I think I sold it in 2010. So that was my first foray into fantasy or into, you know, paranormal fantasy, that kind of thing. Since then, I've done a superhero YA with an artist, a writer named Tara Lynn Childs, who's really a lovely woman and very talented. And then I've also written under a different name. I wrote an urban fantasy series called the Lone Witch series, set in Austin and in an imaginary small town, quite like Fredericksburg, actually, not far outside of Austin. And I also wrote a dragon trilogy under this other name as well for adults. So
this
I don't
is
know
not
that
new
I consider
territory.
Myself a. I'm sorry.
This is not new territory.
No, it's not new territory. I don't necessarily consider myself a fantasy writer because I mean, you know, fantasy writers are freaking amazing, right? They're so amazing. And I'm just so in awe of what they can do. But I'm a paranormal writer. I tend to like set it in our world. I tend to set a paranormal world in our world as opposed to creating an entirely different world.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, several months ago, we got a shipment from UPS that, which, you know, we get a lot of ARCs from publishers and with authors that are coming on the show and things like that. And one of them really stood out because it was a box and it had this great cover art for Crave on the box. And
isn't that pretty?
Oh my gosh. I was like, what in the world is this? And we opened it up and, you know, there's a lot of great, you know, swag in it and stuff. And this big honking book in there. And I was like, what in the world is this about? And then I sat down with it and I opened it up and you immediately caught me with the great narrative style, that you chose in Crave. And, you know, we meet Grace, the character, and it's in first person present tense, which I absolutely love, though, yeah. It's very difficult to pull off. And sometimes as a reader, it's, if not done correctly, it can be very off-putting. But if done correctly, it does exactly what Crave does and it just pulls you right in and you're, you know, connected with the protagonist and you feel like you're in the world that she's in. And, tell me where Crave came from and Grace specifically. And why did you choose to write it the way you did?
Well, that's a 17 lot of questions.
I know. I'm sorry.
Let's start with where Crave came from. I've always wanted to write a vampire novel. Actually, that's not true. I love vampires a lot. I love them. I've devoured them since I was a kid. I got hooked on The Lost Boys, right, when I was little. And I think vampires have been a thing for me ever since. But I was always afraid to try it because I didn't think I had anything new to bring to the table. And, you know, if you're going to do it, you need to make sure you have, you know, you have to make sure you have something new to say, I guess, in the genre. And then Liz from Entangled, who I've known for several years, cause I wrote some books for them a way back. In fact, my first time on the list was with an Entangled book, back in very early 2015. And, she had been talking about how she really wanted to bring vampires back. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so on board for that. And Crave kind of came from that mind meld. And so anyway, that's where it came from. And then why did I choose to write first person present? I love that narrative story. I love that. I love it so much. And I used to write, obviously, third person past. And then I moved to first person past, and then I moved somewhere several years ago. I moved into, present, and it just, for the first time, it just felt right. It felt really comfortable to me. Like I love writing in that. It just feels like home. And, Grace, Grace is interesting because characters tend to, when I start thinking about a book, there's usually one character that starts when I'm trying to like figure out, well, whose story is it? What is this about? What am I doing here? Somewhere in there, a character starts talking to me, and Grace totally started talking to me pretty early on. And she was just like funnier than I expected her to be. And because, you know, I was thinking, you know, dark and tragic and all this. And she's just, you know, indomitable, I think. I think she's got this spirit and she is very witty and a little sarcastic. And yeah, and she's had some bad things happen to her. But she's, you know, she's dealing with them. And I wanted to bring that out because I think sometimes we think, because as you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of feminist overtones in the book, right? And I think sometimes we think teenagers or teen girls, one, we think they either have to be superheroes or they're going to be weak. And I wanted to show somebody who had her weak moments and who was afraid and who was uncertain and did feel like a fish out of water and was a fish out of water at this new school, but who also was like, I'm not going to let that define me. I'm going to make my own life and build my own reality. And that's kind of where her voice came from.
Right. When you're sticking your toe in the water, of writing vampires, and something that was so heavily dominated, and to the point that when you say vampires, people say Twilight. I mean, it was just,
yeah.
So, it was so huge on the landscape for quite a while. When you decide to you know, dip your toe in, are you worried about the comparisons that people will automatically draw? And you know, especially if they don't read the book, you know, people are crazy that way. Were you worried about the comparisons, and were you worried about telling a unique story, you know, doing things that haven't been done yet?
Oh, I think, of course. I mean, I think I'd have to be incredibly arrogant or incredibly stupid not to be worried. And that's the thing, right? I mean, Twilight was such a juggernaut, and it captured the imagination of I mean, so many people. And yeah, of course you go, because I mean, and there are other really great vampire series as well that kind of came out of that time. And I worry about all of them. You know what I mean? I'm like, I want to make sure I mean, if you're going to write in the genre, you want to do justice to it, right? You don't want to be the poor relation. And at the same time, you want to make sure, like I said, that, you know, you worry about it being fresh. You don't want it to be anybody else's idea. So am I worried about comparisons? I'm worried about being told I didn't live up to it, of course. You know, I think any writer trying something has such incredibly epic fans, you know what I mean? That, I mean, vampires are one of those things people get passionate about. I mean, either they love them or they hate them, but they get passionate about them. And so, yeah, I think anytime you're sticking your toe in that water, you're a little nervous, or I'm a little nervous about being told I don't measure up. So I did what I could do. You know, you learn 64 books in, you learn the only thing I can really control is the content of the book, right? So I poured my heart and my soul into it, and I had an amazing editor who really, you know, helped me in different areas, and who poured her heart and soul into it. And I'm really pleased actually with where Crave turned out. And I hope people like it.
Absolutely. We talked about, you know, fantasy authors, earlier, and you know, one thing that fantasy readers absolutely love, are the fantastical worlds that we get to explore. Tell me a little bit about the world building in this book, because it really does have a really unique setting, and the characters and the types of characters that we meet in the book are really interesting. Tell me a little bit about your world building process for this.
Sure. Well, the joke in my family and among my friends is I've always wanted to live in a castle. I've always wanted a turret for my office. I just want a turret. That's all I want. And so, of course, Jackson got one. So that's kind of like, it started there. Like, if I was going to do a fantastical, like, I've always wanted to write a boarding school book. So it started there. And then it started with, well, where would this boarding school be? What would it look like? And it was, well, I mean, it would be a castle, because why would it not be? I finally get to, you know, this great paranormal world. Why would I not put it in a castle? So I built this Catmere Academy. And the title for Catmere, I don't think anybody's caught it yet, but it was totally my Harry Potter homage, because Hogwarts is warthog and Catmere is meerkat. So it's my Lion King Harry Potter homage, I guess. And so that started there. And then I've never been to Alaska, but I was thinking, where could I set this that would be different and hard, right? I mean, I grew up in up and down California's coast, and I claim San Diego's home because it's where I've lived the longest, and growing up anyway. And so I thought, can you imagine coming to Texas, to Austin was a big thing for me. Leaving San Diego, I'm like, what is this weather and why is this happening to me? So I thought, you know, what could be even worse than that? Well, I mean, I couldn't even imagine my San Diego high school girl being like the girl that I was in high school, being like set in Alaska. And then I spent a long time researching where in Alaska. Like originally I wanted to put it up in the tundra in this little town that used to be called Bering, and that was like the northernmost part of America. I guess I'm trying to think of what the actual title the town holds is. But anyway, it's this, you know, landlocked 11 months of the year. But then the sunlight was like such a problem because there were like 24 hours of sunlight and all of that. And I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe not. So I chose kind of an off area near Denali because I wanted to, and in book two, you get to explore the landscape a lot more. And I really wanted to be able to do that with the cold and all of that. And then I love paranormal creatures. I do. I'm a huge paranormal reader, a huge paranormal and fantasy reader. And I just, I mean, dragons, as you know, I'd mentioned, I'd written a trilogy. I love dragons. I love, and I've written a witch series. I love witches. I'm a little iffy on werewolves, which my editor tells me comes out in here. So she wants to see more of them in book two. But I just, you know, I was like, if I'm going to do this boarding school, I want to do like all the different creatures. I want to spend time exploring, you know, how all of them work in a world of my making and what I want to do. And my editor at one point was like, are there any rules you haven't broken? And I'm like, I'm working on it. I'm testing out the boundaries right now, seeing where, how far I want to push the, you know, the basic rules of the lore and the genre. So it was kind of an amalgamation. It was, you know, some things that, you know, from the invention of dragons and the invention of vampires that stayed the same. And then a lot of things that I'm like, you know, no, I'm going to do this a little differently because I can, because it's my world. And why not? Why right. not? What would happen if I did this?
Well, speaking of the,
I don't know if that answers.
Well, yeah. Well, speaking of the rules and the lore, As you're creating the kind of air quotes magic system, the thing that kind of governs the paranormal aspects of your world, how do you keep track of those of your own rules that you set? Is there like a series Bible that you start working on to say, okay,
God,
this
yes.
is how this is going to work? What's that like yeah. for you?
Well, I say series Bible, and really it's just, at this point, a conglomeration of scraps of paper. I know I have so many of my writing friends are so much more organized than I am and so incredible, and they have, like, Scrivener, and they have, like, all of their note cards and all of this all on within easy access, and they can access it from anywhere. And I am one of those people who, like, when I'm thinking about stuff, I like to have a pen and paper in my hands. I think it accesses a different part of your brain, and I think I just think differently that way. And so I have like all kinds of notes that way, and then I've, you know, been typing them up as I'm working on book two, trying to, like, because I'm having to search through shoe boxes of papers. Oh, what did I say about this and what did I say about that? To make sure that everything is, of course, consistent across the world. A series Bible. It will eventually be a series Bible. Right now, it's a series shoebox with flowers on it, flower stickers. But, you know, eventually it will be an actual series Bible.
I love it.
That's the goal.
So what we meet our character Grace in the book because, you know, we are Grace. We're seeing the world through her eyes. What is it? I'm trying to think of how to give people a glimpse into this world. What is it that makes her stand out, and what's the problem, that she's faced with?
The problem that she's faced with, I mean, is total fish out of water. And this is why I think it was a really interesting way to explore the world, because you really are learning it through this character who didn't even know this world existed before she showed up at the school, right? And I think that's always a great way to learn it. But the problem is Grace's parents have died in a terrible car accident, and she is alone in the world, and she has an uncle and cousin in Alaska. Her uncle runs a boarding school in Alaska. This is what she knows. And she's going to go to the boarding school and live there. So she's not in a great frame of mind because it's only been a month since her parents died. And she gets on this airplane and she ends up in Alaska, and, you know, and in the middle, you know, when you're trying to get out to that area. It was so funny when I was researching it. The area I had her land in, I was looking at the airport and I'm like, I kept trying to get, like, on Google Earth, I kept trying to get better pictures of it, right? Because I've never been. And I finally get this, I'm like, it's a landing strip and a parking lot. I mean, there's not even a building. I'm like, it is literally one landing strip and one teeny tiny. And I'm like, how is this? I couldn't even imagine being on a puddle jumper, flying into there in the snow and being like from like San Diego International Airport, right? You're like, I really feel like I've fallen off the ends of the earth. So, okay, I got lost in that and forgot the question. Can you help me out?
Yeah, what's the problem that she faces? And she's the fish out of water.
The problem that she faces is she is in this school. And she figures out pretty quickly that nothing is quite what it seems. But, you know, most of us don't, like, jump to vampire, right, dragon. I mean, that's not like, we're like, at one point she's like, aliens? Like, what? If something is not right here, I don't know what it is. But her first thought was not, under any circumstances, oh, well, I'm going to school with vampires and dragons.
Right.
Because who thinks that? So her problem is trying to figure out what's going on, trying to find a place that she fits in now that her life has been disrupted, and trying to figure out what exactly is going on because she knows something is.
Gotcha. And hilarity ensues from there. How long did it take you to write this book?
This book actually took a little longer. I want to say in May, and because it was such a new thing to me, like it hadn't been like percolating. And usually by the time you sit down to write a book, it's really been percolating in your head a long time. And this one wasn't. It was kind of like, hey, I really would love to do vampires. Hey, I really want to bring vampires back. Hey, let's write a vampire book. And then like, hey, can you write it quick? And we'll get, you know, sure. Yeah, I'll write it quick. And so it took me a little longer. I know I'm sounding incoherent. I'm sorry. It took me a little longer because I really had to think of everything and build this world from scratch, right? Without having had a few months to let it stick in the back of my head while, you know, you wait to find out if anybody's going to buy the book. You know what I mean? Publisher-wise or whatever. And so anyway, it took me like that one. It was about 2 months and to get a rough draft. And at that point, my editor had a couple other projects she was working on. So then we kind of sat on that for a little while. And then when she came back, she's like, this is good, but you need to change this. You need to change this. You need to change this. You need to add that. And so I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. And then we were running up against the deadline. So that was really fast, but there was a lot of changing and a lot of adding. Like, I think we added 50,000 words in a week and a half.
Hello.
Yeah.
That's a full novel for some people.
Yeah. 50 or 60,000 words in a week and a half. And we were like so exhausted. The two of us by the end were just like blithering idiots. No offense, Liz, if you're listening. She was much more coherent than I was. I was like, I'm drooling on myself. So I don't know what you want me to do at this point. But she was amazing. And we got it done. And yeah. But yeah, wow. It was a process, but it took a couple solid months of work, actually, probably the longest I've spent on a book in a while, in a long time. And then another like really frantic 2 to 3 weeks of just revision and adding and changing.
That's amazing. I know that there's a follow-up called Crush.
Yes.
Is this the end for this world that you built, or are there more stories to be told?
It is actually a trilogy. There is a third book, which will be the big finale.
Nice.
And I guess we'll see how it does and whether or not it's the end, right?
Yeah.
But as of now, we're planning on a trilogy. I know where all three books want to go. I'm really excited. I'm working on Crush right now. I'm really excited because I'm really digging more into the world. Because now that Grace knows what's going on, you get to see more of it, you know?
Right.
And that's fun, establishing, you know, more rules and showing more of the paranormal creatures in their natural habitats. And that's been a lot of fun.
So fun. I can't wait to see where you take the series. and I can't wait to see where you take the world. I hope that you get to keep playing in this world after this. The book is called Crave. It's out, available everywhere now. And you know, since a lot of bookstores are closed, I know that your book tour has kind of gotten sidelined from traditional book tour, but you've got a lot of interesting things coming up, and we're all finding new ways to connect and things like that. But there's links to the book in the show notes of this episode. You can grab the Kindle edition, you can grab the audiobook, and when your favorite bookstore opens back up, you know, go buy the hard copy. Tracy, if people want to follow along with all the stuff that you're doing and maybe look for news about the book tour and stuff like that, where can they connect with you online?
I'm at Instagram at Tracy Wolf Books. My website is Tracy Wolf Author, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter as Tracy Wolf as well.
Excellent. We'll link to all of that in the show notes. Tracy, this has been so much fun chatting. Thank you so much for taking time to
come on the show today. It's been
really
lovely.
And we'll cut it
right
there.
Thank you so much for having me, Hank. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Please stay healthy and safe. And take care of yourselves.